What a start to April we've had from a weather standpoint. Welcome in to a Friday edition of the program, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Glad you're with us. George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin will talk some Colts with us coming up at 4:25 on the program. But I just saw this. Well, actually, not just saw this, but a moment earlier, there was hail at Ball State University before a baseball and softball game was scheduled to be played. Wild. And now baseball has been postponed till tomorrow. So the hope was they were going to play today and maybe just play a little bit later in the day. But as weather turned from hail to rain to lightning in the area, it's wild. Wild stuff in April, but I guess that's what the saying goes. April showers bring May flowers, I guess. So here we are. So I would say this if I were you. I would say if you've got a weekend local contest, you might just want to check on the status of that, because I saw there's some golf tournaments that have been postponed, some baseball and softball games that have been postponed, track and field as well. So lots of high school events transition. You know, spring has got to be the toughest time from that standpoint. And the reason why I say that is until it gets nice, you really are challenged as a spring sports coach, because A, you start practicing when it's not warm enough outside. Then April is always that dicey month where you have rain, snow, shoot, you have thunderstorms. It's wild. I mean, absolutely wild. I feel like we talk about this each and every year, and there are more events that are canceled in the spring than any other time of the year. Like fall, you don't see a lot of football games postponed or moved, to be honest with you. You don't see a lot of cross-country events or soccer events, those sorts of things. But it feels like baseball and softball, which are already just kind of weird sports in a lot of ways, they ultimately become weirder by the way that their schedule kind of exists. So anyway, Ball State baseball and softball will have a weekend set. The good news is, knock on wood, things look good for tomorrow and on Sunday for a heck of a weekend here in Muncie, Indiana. So we'll keep you up to date on everything moving along from there. Welcome into the program. Big night for the Indiana Pacers. Really, this whole weekend is a big situation for the Indiana Pacers, a chance to clinch a playoff berth for the first time in 4 years. The last time they played in a playoff game was August 24th of 2020, and that was, the bubble, right? That was in the bubble when T.J. Warren had his cup of tea of ridiculousness for the Indiana Pacers. Remember, T.J. Warren, didn't he score 50 in a playoff game or something along those lines? Because the bubble had both regular season games and postseason games attached to it, because when the NBA season concluded at the middle to late part of March at that time period, you had a lot of different things that were going on. And T.J. Warren, I mean, that was 4 years ago, and T.J. Warren was the dude. He got injured, never ultimately played much more for the Indiana Pacers after that, but that's how long it's been. Think about all the different moves that you've gone through. During that time, you traded Victor Oladipo. During that time, you had Caris LeVert. During that time, you traded Domantas Sabonis for Tyrese Halliburton. It has been a long, long 4 years. And, you know, really, the applause you should give this Indiana Pacers front office, regardless of how this weekend goes, is how quickly they have transitioned from a team that was in rebuild mode to a team that is one of the up-and-coming franchises in the NBA. Think about some of these franchises that have really struggled to get out of A, mediocrity, but B, the cellar. The San Antonio Spurs just got one of the most transcendent talents in the NBA draft, and they will be one of the three worst teams in the NBA. Meanwhile, the Indiana Pacers acquire Tyrese Haliburton. It takes them a year and a half to get out of the cellar. It's amazing what they've done, because the NBA is one of the toughest leagues to, when you're bad, to get out of the bad. The NFL is set up to really kind of move things along. So, like, when you are a top, when you have a top draft pick or your top three drafting team, the system is set up for you to succeed rather quickly, actually. It's set up for you to get out of the cellar very, very quickly. Not only do you get one of the top three or four players in the NFL draft, you also get the benefit of the one of the weaker schedules in the NFL. You face the teams that finished last in their division. You get to face them and get the benefit of that. Your schedule lightens up. It's amazing. But because the NFL season is 17 games compared to the NBA it being 82 games, you got to have a total transformation from a roster standpoint to really survive 82 games. Like, there aren't very many surprise teams in the NBA. You know, Major League Baseball is very similar. You can't fool the rest of Major League Baseball for 162 games. That's why it really doesn't matter what happens in 30, 40 games at the start of the year. Everything kind of levels out at the end of the year, and it's why the urgency changes. And really, it's probably why football and the NFL has become more and more popular as the years have gone on, because I think fans have gotten to the point with so many different things to engage their attention, realize that the end of the year is more important than the beginning of the year. I'm not saying that's right. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just kind of saying what it is. But I think there's some applause that needs to be given to the Indiana Pacers front office. Because if you look at a lot of these teams that stay at the top of the draft, look at the Detroit Pistons. Where in the world is their optimism? I mean, where can you look at? They've had a couple of number one draft picks. Cade Cunningham was a number one draft pick couple 3 years ago. I mean, he's out of sight, out of mind. It's amazing to see how Indiana has gotten out of the cellar. It is so easy to stay there when you get there, and I imagine that is why the Simon family for so many years resisted the idea of tanking. Resisted the idea, and by the way, I don't think what the Pacers did was tanking. Resisted the idea of selling and selling everything off of their franchise. And yet, they did it and kind of put the trust in Kevin Pritchard. Kevin Pritchard, about 3 years ago, was, you know, it wasn't publicly out there, but it was behind the scenes where people were asking the question, when is the sea going to get a little warm for Kevin Pritchard? Well, not only did he save this franchise with the moves he made when they moved on from Domantas Sabonis, Victor Oladipo, Caris LeVert, etc., not only did he do that, he completely redirected this franchise with a couple series of moves. And look at where they are now with Tyrese Haliburton, Pascal Siakam, and a whole host of young players that continue to look like they're going to grow together. Like, I don't think we give him enough credit from that standpoint. I don't know who will be executive of the year this year, but it's possible that Kevin Pritchard will not get that award, but he should have gotten that award last year. He should have gotten it the previous year, because what he navigated with this basketball team is flat out impressive. But you know what? Where it goes? It goes based on your overall record. And I get that. I understand. That's the true mark of, you know, executive of the year. And, you know, I'm sure it follows coach of the year as well. But you can't argue that there's been a more important executive to their franchise in the NBA than Kevin Pritchard to the Indiana Pacers. Got to give them credit where credit is due, because so many times the worst teams in the NBA stay the worst teams in the NBA. I mean, Charlotte's been there for a while. Detroit's been there for a while. San Antonio's there for a second straight year. Maybe they make a Pacers-like jump next year after another top three draft pick this upcoming year. But you look at those franchises, and they stay there, and they stay there for a very long time. So what Indiana and Kevin Pritchard and this team has done is flat out impressive. So tonight, they have a matchup with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And all it takes for Indiana is one win in their final two games to secure a playoff spot in a top six seed. And you look at all these things and you say, you know what? They have an opportunity to get even higher than six. Yes, they do. But at the end of the day, I look at the potential matchups that they could have in the first round. And right now, Indiana is in the sixth seed. If they win tonight, they secure that. So right now, if they were the sixth seed in the NBA playoffs, they'd face off against the New York Knicks, who, by the way, just lost their second-best player to injury for the rest of the year. I like my chances against the New York Knicks. I would. And then the team you're playing tonight in Cleveland, here's something funny about it. If you beat Cleveland tonight, you secure a top six seed in the playoffs. If you win against Atlanta over the weekend, it's possible you might be facing Cleveland again in the first round series. I like my chances against the Cleveland Cavaliers as well, because not only have they been banged up, the Pacers have performed very well against them. I think we've got an opportunity this year, I guess minus the Boston Celtics at the top of the Eastern Conference. It would not shock me in the least if we had, you know, Philadelphia's the seventh seed right now, and they came out of the play-in and they faced Milwaukee. I think they could give Milwaukee a heck of a series. I think the Pacers could give the New York Knicks a heck of a series. I think the Orlando Magic right now against Cleveland could give them a heck of a series. The seeds 2 through 6 right now are separated by a total of 3 games. So that is 5 teams separated by a total of 3 games. I think we could have some massive upsets in the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. So the whole point of it is this: secure your position in the top six. I don't think it necessarily matters who you play, because if you secure your position in the top six, you avoid Milwaukee, you avoid Boston. Now, you've played well against Milwaukee. You've also played well against Boston. I don't want to face Boston, obviously, because they are 13 games better than any other team in the Eastern Conference. I don't want to face them. I think that goes without saying, but we'll say it. Milwaukee, there is still an outside chance that they could fall to the number 3 seed. So even if you got the 6 seed, it's possible you could face them. I don't think that that's very likely, but hey, I guess anything's possible in this day and age in the NBA playoffs. But I don't think the Pacers necessarily would be afraid of anybody in that first round. I don't think there's anybody that they would say they don't feel like they're a good matchup for. And maybe that would even go for if they played the Boston Celtics. I don't know. Obviously, Indiana's played very well against Boston in the regular season. Point of the matter is this: I think the Eastern Conference is fairly wide open, and there really isn't Milwaukee, New York, Cleveland, Orlando. It wouldn't matter to me who they played, because every single one of those teams, they have ended up having very good success against. So we will see what happens tonight. So Indiana has the matchup with Cleveland, okay? So they've got that matchup coming up tonight. And then Sunday is the matchup at 1 o'clock with the Atlanta Hawks. Now, here's the deal. You win tonight, the possibilities of you moving up are even better, for obvious reasons. You win both of these games, you might be a 4 or 5 seed, and you might have an outside chance at hosting a playoff series. Again, I think it's more important that you just get in the top six and then see where your chips fall from that standpoint. But right now, Indiana's playing as good a basketball in the Eastern Conference in their last 10 games as anybody else. Philadelphia 7-3 in their last 10. The Pacers are 7-3 in their last 10. Everybody else is really right around 500 or worse. And that's why the opportunities are there that Indiana could get as high as the number 4 seed in the NBA playoffs, which is crazy. I mean, it is absolutely wild to see how all of that plays out. But anyway, I think it's going to be a lot of fun tonight. And, you know, I think Cleveland's going to feel the pressure. I think Indiana kind of sits there and says, you know what, hey, we'll see what happens. Because really, a while back, last couple weeks, Cleveland's been, you know, separated from the Indiana Pacers by more than a couple of games. So the fact that Cleveland's come all the way back to the pack, and that as we end the regular season, there's opportunities for the Pacers to kind of reel the Cleveland Cavaliers in. There's pressure. There's also pressure from Cleveland, and I do think that this plays a factor. A lot of reports about Donovan Mitchell maybe not being with Cleveland next year. That's their best player. And how he might go elsewhere, the Cavs may have to trade him, whatever the case may be. All that chatter doesn't help you at this time of the year. And then you've got a hungry Indiana Pacers team with an opportunity to clinch a playoff spot, all those different things. I think this is going to be a really good night for Indiana. We'll see. But I think all of those factors, factor in. There you go. I mean, I didn't mean to, you know, throw factor 15 times in that conversation, but there you are. So I am interested with what happens tonight with Indiana, and we will recap it all coming up on Monday's show. Thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. Appreciate that very, very much. The Coach's Corner is live from Mulligan's Clubhouse Grill and Crestview Golf Club coming up tomorrow. There's a great show tomorrow. I'm excited to listen into the show. Zach Johnson will be hosting the Coach's Corner tomorrow at Crestview Golf Club, Mulligan's Clubhouse Grill. We will have Matt Luce, Wapahani boys basketball coach. He will be joined by recently named Indiana All-Star Isaac Andrews and assistant coach Jeff Andrews as well, as they talk about the year and, of course, the spotlight on Isaac and what he was able to accomplish in his senior season as well. Zach will have that conversation. Also, the 2A wrestling state champion Delta Eagles will be in the house. Cody LeCount and a couple of his wrestlers will be with him, as you know, feels like a long time ago. That was back in February where the state finals occurred, but Delta had a heck of a year. That program is certainly on the rise. Cody LeCount and that crew will be at Mulligan's Clubhouse Grill Crestview Golf Club. And Kyle Mealy, the superintendent of Westdale Community Schools, will be with Zach Johnson tomorrow as well, as they talk a little bit about the facility upgrades that have occurred at Westdale High School, including a new golf facility. The baseball and softball facilities are going to be upgraded as well. A lot of changes happening to Westdale Athletics, and Kyle Mealy will be there to discuss it all with Zach Johnson tomorrow. Again, the Coach's Corner is live at 10 a.m. here on 92.5 FM, 1340 AM, WMUN. Zach Johnson will have all of that coming up tomorrow. When we come back, look, we had a long conversation about the Indianapolis Colts and roster construction. You may think it's redundant, but I want to get George's thoughts on a lot of this and, you know, some of the things the Colts have done and what they haven't done and what it means for the NFL draft, because the NFL draft is coming up here in a couple of weeks. The first round will occur, well, it would have been 2 weeks from yesterday. Believe it or not, that is coming very, very rapidly. And there's been a lot of reported meetings that the Colts have had with wide receivers, with cornerbacks, with a lot of different personnel. What does it mean, and what do all these meetings mean? George Bremer is going to give us a good lowdown on that. He'll join us right after this. Power Talk of Muncie, WMUN. Yes, welcome back to it, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, always presented by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie, online, wallsfurniture.com, 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road right here in Muncie and online at wallsfurniture.com. Always glad to be joined by George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin. He joins us as we speak, as weather over in Madison County, very much like Delaware County, a lot of the weekend sporting events altered due to what's going on with the weather the last couple of days. George?
It's been terrible here. This is our Madison County Championship week. You know, we had tournaments going on for baseball, softball, tennis, track. Virtually nothing has happened because, as you know, lots of rain, and then today we get some nice hail and thunder in there as well. So welcome to spring in Indiana, right?
Oh, man, yeah. You know, they don't really use that as a sales tactic to get people from out of state to move in, saying, hey, April, you get to see all forms of weather. I would think that that'd be a selling point. I don't know.
You could have every season in the 24-hour period in April.
You don't have to wait all year to see fall, winter, spring, summer. You get to see it all in maybe a week's time. There you go.
Only in Indiana.
Only in Indiana. Well, George, you mentioned this to me on the phone. I want to get to this before we talk some Colts. But, you know, it feels like it is. The energy is at an all-time level for what's possibly to occur – probable to occur with Caitlin Clark being drafted by the Indiana Fever. Your coverage is going to ramp up as a result of that. Like, you know, what about the attention of all of this, and what can people expect with people maybe hearing more daily, weekly coverage from not just you and others, but statewide about what this significance means for the Indiana Fever?
Yeah, I mean, 18.9 million viewers for that NCAA championship game. What was it, 14-something for the semifinals? That's going to grab everybody's attention. And we know a lot of that had to do with one player who is on her way to Indianapolis. I think it's going to be a game changer here. I mean, the Fever have had their moments of you know, a little more attention than other years. Tamika Catchings was there. They were winning a WNBA title. They got a little more attention. But I think you're going to see them like never before now. I think we've already seen 36 of their 40 games are going to be on national television. So this is going to stretch beyond Indiana. I would imagine the entire state of Iowa is going to suddenly be Fever fans. I think it's going to be something that we have not seen for a while. And my hope, honestly, is that it helps bring the numbers up, you know, girls basketball. I don't know what it's like in Delaware County right now, but I know over here we've had one program that hasn't even had a team for 2 years in a row, several that you know, only have maybe six or eight on the varsity roster, lots of schools that don't have JV numbers, and hopefully the excitement around the Fever will trickle down and maybe get some of these younger girls wanting to play the game again and help, you know, basketball across the state.
Is it fair to compare this as, you know, number one draft pick hype attention as LeBron drafted in early 2000 to what Caitlin Clark and the impact and the player and the career of one of the greatest of all time? She's already been described that at the college level. Of course, LeBron didn't play college. Is there an apt comparison to what Caitlin Clark means to the women's game and her draft being drafted number one in comparison to an NBA player in any way?
I think so. You know, I go back to the early 80s. You know, I'm old enough to remember a little bit of that. When Magic Johnson and Larry Bird came into the league, and the NBA was not in great shape at that point. They had a lot of scandals going on. The ratings weren't great, but those two captured the country's imagination, you know, going to the national title game at Michigan State and Indiana State, playing against one another. When they came into the draft, their rivalry really helped launch the NBA as we know it today. There were other players who added to that along the way, but they were the catalyst. And I think Clark has that similar ability here to come in, and maybe Angel Reese as well to be that foil for her. You know, next year Paige Beckers will join that group. I think it's one of these things where she can be sort of the spark here that gets the WNBA moving towards, you know, will they get to the heights the NBA is at? I don't know if that's a realistic goal, but I think you're going to see that league really surge and continue to surge because she plays the game like no one we've seen before. You know, I think that's one of the things that really she captures so many people's imagination, not just with the long-distance shots, some of the passes that she makes. Iowa played such a high-tempo game because they could with her style. I would imagine the Fever are going to be similar in that regard, you know, up-tempo, really fun style to watch. That's going to draw in fans. And the fans that come to watch Caitlin Clark, some of them are going to decide other players on the Fever are going to become their favorite players, other players in the league. That's how these things grow.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch. It's George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin. What is going on if somebody were to ask you, hey, you know, from a draft process standpoint for the Indianapolis Colts, it's been very quiet that way, but we're less than two weeks away from the first round. What's going on in that building right now, George?
You're firming up your plans. I mean, obviously, at this point, your board is set. So you're no longer moving people around, you know, in terms of trying to rank them. I mean, this is through the top tight end. All that's done. Now you're playing out scenarios. You know, from the way Chris Ballard has explained it before, right now it's sort of a war game situation. You're going through and saying, okay, what if there's an opportunity to move up to this pick? What would we give up? You know, and who would be the target? What if there's an opportunity to move down to this pick? Who would still be there, and what would the plan be, and what would it take for us to move? You know, if this person's taken, who's our top target at 15? If these people are off the board, you're just playing out scenarios so that when that Thursday finally comes around and you're on the clock, nothing is new to you. You know, you're going through almost everything you can conceivably imagine right now, every possible permutation of trades, of players going off the board that unexpectedly, and you're coming up with plan A, B, C, D, all the way down to Z, and that's what you see going on all across the league right now. Unless you have the number one overall pick, you're trying to play out every scenario that could happen before you're finally on the clock.
Based on need, being at 15, is that a good position for the Colts to be in?
I think it's not bad. I mean, if you look at, you know, what we have out there right now, which is always incomplete information, it does seem like they're going to have some options. You know, there should be some corners potentially in play there. There should be some wide receivers potentially in play there. Potentially even a pass rusher, depending on, you know, how things play out there in the top 10, and that seems to change on a daily basis right now. But I think that they're going to have options for some areas that they really need. The one thing I know, and we've seen this in the past with Chris Ballard, he won't get locked in on one spot. You know, for years I sat there and thought, okay, they're going to take an offensive tackle. They have to. There's no other option here. You know, that's never really been his MO. They're going to go best player available. I'm sure they have a list, probably maybe up to 10 guys that they feel like will either be there at 15 or that they can reach, you know, trade up for, or that they can trade back for. And they're going to stick to that pretty solidly. You know, whoever's number one on that list, when they finally come on the clock, will be the guy they pick.
Let's go back to last year. You mentioned, you know, Chris Ballard doesn't lock in on one position. Feels like last year was the exception for obvious reasons. Had it not been Anthony Richardson, would it have been another quarterback? Or if Richardson wasn't on the board, would they have gone a different position and traded up? Like, what was it going to be 100% quarterback last year? That may sound like a dumb question, but I'm curious based on your previous response there.
Yeah, you know, I think it was going to be 100% quarterback, but that's where a lot of people, you know, were asking, if you were so locked in on Anthony Richardson as they were, why did you not move up? Things worked out for them. Obviously, it you know, played out in a way that was really good for them, but you do wonder, you know, how much, and Chris Ballard has admitted he was sweating a lot, you know, at number three, waiting to see what was going to happen there. Because if the wrong team had moved in and grabbed Richardson, I'm not sure what plan B would have been. You know, maybe they would have gone ahead and taken another position. I think they would have traded back because I think the goal would have been to get Will Levis. But I don't know if you would have done that at number four. I think probably you would have traded back at that point, added some picks, picked up Levis later in the draft, and maybe also grabbed somebody else. But, yeah, I think last year was probably because of the quarterback position, they had to come out of there with a QB. So I think it was probably more locked in than at any other point since Chris Ballard's been here.
So they had Anthony Richardson higher graded than C.J. Stroud. I know in retrospect, a year later, people think that's ridiculous, but at the time, Anthony Richardson would have been the choice had C.J. Stroud been on the board?
That's my understanding, is that, you know, they've said a couple times they would have taken him at number one if they had had that pick. So it was Anthony Richardson all the way. And they were fortunate enough, the way things fell, that, you know, that number three pick got traded to Houston, and Houston went, I don't know, it was fortune, because Houston ended up with Will Anderson as well. But it was fortunate in the sense that they did not lose their target. You know, there was always that possibility. Had Tennessee moved in there? I know Seattle was interested. I think there were a couple other teams that were talking with Arizona. Had they won that bidding, it might be a very different situation right now in Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's George Bermer from the Herald Bulletin with us. Ultimately, you know, the variety of different prospects here. Let's talk best case scenario for the Colts when the draft got to number 15. I think the easiest way to go in this is if it gets quarterback crazy in the first 14 picks. Is that to be assumed?
Absolutely. I mean, if there really are four straight quarterbacks off the board, one through four, as there are some projections right now, that would be a dream scenario for Indianapolis.
Yeah, they'd be. Now, you know, 15 is also a position, as we know, that Chris Ballard loves to trade back and loves to acquire more picks. The other best case scenario in some form or fashion for the Colts is you get to 15 and there's three quarterbacks, or even if there's the top four, and then you have 10 straight positional players picked, and you get into, you know, let's say the first four are you know, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, then you have J.J. McCarthy, and then let's just say Michael Penix. You know, if Bo Nix becomes a part of that, Drake May becomes a part of that. When you get to 15, is that also the sweet spot where a quarterback needy team or a team that loves a particular one of those two prospects comes and gives you a call right in the middle of the first round?
That's the other good scenario from the Colts. You want as many to go in the top 10 as possible. And then ideally there's one or two quarterbacks out there that other quarterback needy teams that haven't already gotten their guy really fall in love with and want to come up at 15 and grab them. That's the other best case scenario from the Colts standpoint, because you're obviously going to get the most return for a team coming up to get a quarterback. You know, if they're coming up for something else, those deals aren't usually as rich, but when they're coming up for a quarterback, they're willing to give up a little more than maybe the value of the pick would normally be. So I think that would be another, you know, the best case for the Colts would be if like five of them go. If there's some kind of surprise run, it's more than expected before 15, and there's only like maybe one guy out there, and a team gets desperate and overpays to get them.
Okay, if I were to set the over-under at 4.5, would you take the over or under? How many quarterbacks taken before pick 15 in this year's NFL draft? It'd be what in the first round?
I'm going to go just under. I really feel like four is kind of the number right now. I mean, it sounds like Williams, Daniels, May, and McCarthy are the most likely to go in that top four. But I do think it's the real intriguing thing about this quarterback class is you can talk to 10 people and you're going to get 10 different rankings. You know, even number one isn't guaranteed. And so, you know, where Bo Nix falls, where Michael Penix falls, that's what's going to be interesting for the Colts, because if those guys get moved up on draft day, at the very least, it's going to push an even better prospect down to Indianapolis. And maybe, you know, as we were talking about, maybe it will result in them getting a really nice draft haul, you know, for somebody to come and get one of those guys.
From a wide receiver standpoint, is it imperative for the Colts to get one in the first round?
I don't know about the first round. I think it would be really a good idea, given the fact that, you know, obviously Michael Pittman is the centerpiece of that room, and he's going to be the number one target next year. I think they love what they saw from Josh Downs. I mean, he had a really good rookie season. He's somebody you feel like you can build with. The big question now is, you know, where are you on Alec Pierce? Do you feel like he's going to unlock a little bit more of his skill set? The deep ball is going to be a bigger part of the game. You're going to see more from him this year. Do you feel like you need improvement right there at number three? Because if you're looking at number four, where they only had 11 catches last year, which is still incredible to me, the fourth wide receiver, there were tight ends, running backs who had more than that, but the fourth wide receiver only had 11 catches last year. And that's like, I don't know if you've seen that in the league since maybe the 1980s. But if you're looking at number four, that might not be as imperative that, it's a first-round pick. If you're looking at number three, that's basically a starter. You know, yeah, it depends on where they feel about Alec Pierce to me, how important it is that it happens right there, you know, out of the gate.
Because I look at this wide receiver class very much how you describe the quarterback class. You've got Harrison Jr., Neighbors, Worthy, and Odunze. Those four seem to be the top four wide receivers. But like you said about the quarterbacks, number one isn't really predetermined, whereas, you know, 3 months ago, it was a slam dunk. It was Marvin Harrison Jr. Kind of feels like that's a little bit up for interpretation. So if you get one of the top four, no matter who it is, do you feel good about it in your opinion, George?
Oh, absolutely. They were able to land one of those guys. I don't think that's going to happen, but we'll see. You know, if one of those guys is available at 15, one of those top four guys, you absolutely be pleased as you can be. I mean, the one thing that they talk about all offseason, they want to add explosion. And they felt like there was going to be an opportunity to do that. So who's that explosive player who's there at 15? Those names would be right at the top of that list.
What about Brock Bowers?
I think he's the best case scenario. To me, that's the one. I think he's a little more realistic than those receivers, because I think they're going to go in the top 12, if not the top 10. I think it's going to be really early on. It's going to be really quarterback, wide receiver heavy, and I think the offensive tackles will fill in the gaps there. Maybe you'll have a corner. Maybe you'll have a pass rusher in there, but I think it's going to be a lot of quarterbacks, a lot of receivers. The one team to watch with Bowers is the Jets at 10, because it makes a lot of sense for them to grab him, give Aaron Rodgers that kind of a weapon. If he gets past the Jets at 10, there's a real possibility he'll still be there at 15. And if the Colts could take him at 15 and not move and not give up any other elements, that, to me, would be the ideal outcome for this draft.
So it feels like if you have one of those top four wide receivers, you feel good about taking those. Bowers, we mentioned, as well. Is cornerback one of those where you look at and say, if there's a top three cornerback available, are you better off trading back than taking one of the top three? Is cornerback one of those where it's deep, or you kind of want one of the top guys to get one of the top guys?
Yeah, it kind of depends on what the offer is, I think, and what else is on the board. I feel like if all the receivers and Bowers are gone by 15, which is possible, and you don't have one of those pass rushers fall down, especially Dallas Turner. I think he's a guy who would really fit this team and what they're looking for really well. If none of that's available to you, then I could see them going with like a Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, who really fits all of the, you know, measurables that the Colts look for. A small school guy. He went to Senior Bowl. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's in a lot of ways, he's a very prototypical Chris Ballard draft pick. I don't think they would feel uncomfortable taking a player like that at 15. He's obviously in need. Add him into that mix, and it'll keep that secondary young, but you'll add a little more talent, a little more competition to that group. I don't think they would hesitate to do that. But at the same time, if you've got three or four guys that you feel good about, and you know somebody wants you to move back to 19 or 20, and the haul is worth it, it's something they'll have to absolutely consider.
So you mentioned at the beginning that really it's best player available early on. Does it get to the point where the first-round draft pick determines the positional hierarchy for the rest of the draft, that the first round kind of sets the course for the entire draft of positional need moving forward?
For sure, because you know if you take a receiver, then all of a sudden corner becomes probably the more likely second-round pick, and vice versa. If a corner goes number one, you know, then your second-round pick probably is more likely going to be a receiver, including tight end in that situation, too. I mean, you get a tight end that kind of counts the same way. Pass catcher, I should probably say, would be a more accurate label in that situation. But Ballard's always going to be, to some extent, best player available, period. He really doesn't draft that much for need. You've seen that in the past. You know, they will do it when there's a glaring hole. And I feel like at some point in this draft, they've got to come away with a receiver and they've got to come away with a corner. Whether they're the first two picks or not, there likely will be, but whether they're the first two picks or not, they're going to have to come out of there eventually with them. But with him, it's always going to be more of a – he doesn't want to miss a really great player, somebody who hits all of their numbers. because they were looking in a different direction. I know that that's something he's always keyed on.
Well, it's going to intensify over the next week as the NFL draft, as of yesterday, would be 2 weeks away. The first round, then the second round on the Friday, et cetera, moving forward. George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin will be all over it. Hey, George, have a great weekend. Stay dry. Look forward to talking to you more next week.
Yeah, good luck. Hopefully we can get some events in here and talk to you again next week.
Yep, that sounds good. It's George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin with us. Just kind of a start on the NFL draft side of things. And again, you may have felt like that was very broad, a lot of positions we were talking about, but that's really the position that the Colts are in from a first-round standpoint. I think there's some very well-defined needs, as we've talked about before, but I don't think that there's any sort of, it's definitely going to be this position in the first round. It'll really be determined by what happens in front of them. So, all right, final break, final segment of the week when we return. Power and Talk of Muncie, WMUN. George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin a moment ago, but Monday's a big day. That is the WNBA draft. Indiana Fever have the number one overall draft pick. You know, and there's been people that, again, have been following this Caitlin Clark story and may understand some of the context, but the $18 million that watched the national championship game, the $14 million that watched the Elite Eight game of Iowa and LSU. But Iowa did a study on the impact of Caitlin Clark, and her impact on the university was estimated at an $82 million university-wide impact. Like, if you understand that, that's why this has become such a huge, huge deal. You know, Indianapolis is a sports city, always has had a very positive reflection across the country, but they're going to be more and more and more into the spotlight. In a couple of years, well, actually last year we were talking about this, the youth movement in Indiana sports, Tyrese Haliburton with the Pacers, Anthony Richardson with the Indianapolis Colts, and now Caitlin Clark and Aaliyah Boston with the Indiana Fever. It's crazy to think this. Aaliyah Boston had a very accomplished college career at South Carolina in women's basketball, but Caitlin Clark's going to come in and be a star instantly. And people know her. And, you know, I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there nationally that may be familiar with Aaliyah Boston, but Caitlin Clark's a different sort of level of star. And so you're getting a basketball player that's going to bring eyeballs, national attention, etc. But there's going to be a significant economic impact to Indianapolis as a result of this. And it is going to be wild, to be honest with you, because the momentum is so crazy right now for women's basketball as a whole and the WNBA. Again, I mentioned this last week. I just hope they're ready to capitalize on this, because this is an immense opportunity for the league, and they best take advantage of it, because regionally, Indiana's going to do it fine. It's more of a matter of how league-wide this is received. So we'll talk a little bit about that coming up on Monday, because it is expected to be a big-time day for Indiana sports, the Indiana Fever, and, you know, we'll have a lot of coverage of it coming up next week. So hope you all have a great weekend. Stay dry. Goodness gracious, it looks like it's going to be a better weekend than it has been over the last couple of days. Thanks to George Brimmer for joining us. Have a great weekend. We're back with you at 4 o'clock on Monday. Talk to you then.